Okay, I've started recording. Let's see. I was going to hand back extra homeworks of those few people who hadn't picked up their homeworks the last time, but I left them upstairs, so I'll do it as soon as I can. And I think everything else, I have received lots of your homeworks by email, and I will confirm that later today, I hope. And we were in the middle of thrashing around with selection mathematics, and we had gotten a gene frequency formula for the case of discrete life cycles, diploids, infinite population, no migration, no mutation, sexes having the same genotype, and, well, gene frequencies, really. And we get p squared times the fitness, the relative fitness of big A, big A, plus p times 1 minus p times the relative fitness of heterozygote. And that reflects that all of the offspring from big A have a big A, and half the offspring of the 2p1 minus p that are heterozygotes, half of those gametes are containing a big A. And then you have to divide by the weighted average of the fitnesses of everybody, which is simply what would happen if you dipped into the population and grabbed a random individual and had them tell you what their genotypic fitness was. The average number you would get back would be that weighted average on the denominator. And when you look at this, you can see the first thing that, you know, you can see there's a p in every term, so you bring p out front. And then you have p times w of the homozygote plus 1 minus p times the w of the heterozygote all over this thing here. Well, the denominator is just the average fitness of everybody in the population, so we'll call it w bar. But the numerator is what has to command our attention. It's a weighted average of the fitnesses of the homozygote and the heterozygote, weighted p1 minus p. And it's not immediately obvious, but what it really is to say, if I take a random big A, if I go out into the population, grab copies of genes, let's say each of you has two copies, I grab a random individual, pick one of their genes and say, are you a big A? And if the gene says, no, I'm a little A, save me. Okay, we'll throw you back. Okay. But if we grab somebody else and grab a gene and, are you a big A? Yes, I'm a big A. Okay, what is the fitness of the genotype that you are in? Okay. On average, the answer is this thing here, because the one way of thinking of it is, if this individual gene was a big A, what's the probability that the other copy in the same individual is also a big A? So given that you have a copy of the big A, what's the other copy? Well, those two copies came in on gametes, independently drawn. One had a big A. What's the chance the other one has a big A? The answer is what? Probability of two gametes are coming, we see that one has a big A. What's the chance the other one, given that, what's the chance the other one is a big A?
If they're at equal frequency, wouldn't it be one half?
Not necessarily, because big A's could, for example, be very rare in the population, in which case the chance that the other one is a big A is small.
Yeah, so it'd be one half times the frequency of...
Well, almost.
Or just the frequency, yeah. I guess. Yeah, it's just
it's the frequency.
Yeah.
It is, because it's, I'm trying to think of a quick analogy, but the point is the two events, what's in this gamete and what's in that gamete, are independent. And once I've looked at this one and found that it's a big A, I actually haven't said anything about what's in the other one. So it's just a random draw from the giant pot of gametes. And as you indicated, that means the probability it's a big A is just the gene frequency, big A, of P. P is, yeah. Go ahead.
So we're talking about the selection or the...
Well, right now we're just talking about the individuals as they're newborns.
Right, and the fitness of the genotype of the individual with one big A or two big A's, or are we assuming that the fitness is multiplied depending on the number of A's?
No.
No.
We're just taking every different pairs, big A, heterozygote, little a, each will have its own fitness.
Okay.
And there's no special scheme yet. We'll do exactly a scheme like that in a moment. So the probability, if you're a big A, the probability that your partner in this diploid genotype is a big A is just P. Similarly, the probability that it's a little a has to be the rest of the probability, namely 1 minus P. So it's a weighted average of the genotypes that you would get in proportions P and 1 minus P, and their fitnesses are W big A and W big A little a. But what that means is that thing in parentheses is the mean fitness of big A's, of those genotypes in which big A's find themselves. So I'm going to call that W sub big A with a bar over it. Because remember, the W's go with two subscripts to indicate a whole genotype. Here we're just saying A big A, which is with somebody else, what's its average fitness of the individual it finds itself in. And the denominator is W bar. So this is a very simple formula. In fact, if you're going to memorize a formula here, that's the one. For diploids, that's the one to memorize. For haploids, there was a corresponding formula, except it didn't need a bar over the numerator. Yeah?
You may have said this, and I wasn't paying attention.
I did say it, and it's outrageous that you would bring it up again. I'm sorry. Okay, yes.
What? I'm so embarrassed. The P, why did it lose a sub?
Oh, the P's here, we could put big A's, instead of 1 minus P, we could have little p sub little a.
Okay.
I'm just using the alternative, which is to say, well, we've got two alleles, let's just follow the frequency of big A and call it P.
Oh, okay.
And you should be able to sort of go back and forth between using those as convenient. If you have 8 alleles, you'd need subscripts.
Okay.
But if you have 2 alleles, you get the choice of just following one of them because the other has to be 1 minus that. So, I mean, you could write this as P big A prime equals P big A times W big bar big A over W bar. Same expression. I mean, it's the same. Okay, so we have that. Now what we want to do is look at some special cases. Yes, please.
Trying to think about that last formula, P multiplied by that average of A.
It's the average fitness of those places that A find themselves.
Those places that A find themselves. So
yeah.
Like an individual that is, so a heterozygote and a homozygote, they'll both have that one?
They'll both contribute to this quantity, which is this thing here. It's a weighted average of the two cases in which they find themselves, which are big A and heterozygote. So let's look at some particular cases, and the one that is interesting is the one that was mentioned a moment ago of having some multiplicative rule, and that is, suppose that I say that the fitness of little a will take that as the standard. So we're doing relative fitnesses because in all these expressions there are W's in both the numerator and the denominator. And if we can, the change of gene frequency doesn't depend on the actual sizes of the W's, but only on their ratios to each other. So we'll call W little a 1. And then we'll say, suppose the heterozygote now it has one big A. Suppose the fitness is 1 plus S, where S could be either positive or negative. So having a big A makes you S, a fraction S different in fitness. In the positive case, S higher. Now let's suppose it also is true that big A is that squared. So every time we change a little a into a big A, we add a fraction s in fitness, and it multiplies. It's compound interest. It goes up by 1%. So like if s is 0.01, those would be 1, 1.01, and this would not be 1.02, but 1.0201. It's 1 plus s squared. Now, the reason for being interested in this is it gives you a particularly simple result. Because if we start computing these things here, we will get, I'll do it from the top formula, p prime is p times 1 plus s squared plus 1 minus p times 1 plus s. And in the denominator, p squared 1 plus s squared plus the heterozygote frequency in newborns times 1 plus s plus the homozygote frequency, the little a homozygote frequency times 1. Okay. When you look at that, it looks, you know, just kind of messy. But you can simplify it. Every term in the numerator has a 1 plus s in it. So it will be p times 1 plus s. And when you take that out, you'll get p times 1 plus s plus 1 minus p, which doesn't look very interesting. The denominator is actually kind of interesting, because if you look at it closely, you'll see it's a perfect square. There's a p squared 1 plus s squared, and there's a 1 minus p squared. So if you take this thing I'm just writing here and square it, you get the denominator. Now you look at them and you'll see that this up here is the same as one of these factors down here. So we can cross, we can cancel them, the numerator one and one of the denominator ones, and you get p times 1 plus s over this thing. Now look at this thing in the square brackets. It is p times 1 plus s, p times s plus 1 minus p. So there's a p plus a 1 minus p in it, so I claim it to be 1 plus s p. Now, if you looked back at the haploid case and did all the same math, you'll find an interesting thing. I guess I didn't do this exact formula in haploids, but I'm going to make a claim, a statement. If you were to do the case of haploids where it's 1 plus s to 1 as the fitness is in haploid, you get exactly this formula. It's changing exactly as haploids would if the big A's have an advantage 1 plus s. And that's what happens, because it says everywhere there is a big A, the fitness gets higher by a fraction, by a fraction s. So this one is particularly simple. It has the property that if I take p prime over, if I take the ratio of the two gene frequencies in both the haploid and the diploid case, it just gets multiplied by 1 plus s every generation. I haven't done every step here. And I hope you will find it in your heart to forgive me for that, or go back and check it yourself. But so the nice thing about this multiplicative case is it's the same equation as the haploids. It has this formula that the ratio of the gene frequencies gets multiplied by a constant fraction every generation if the fitnesses stay constant. And so everything is very simple. So that also means it is possible, for example, to say, well, what will happen after 1,273 generations? And the answer is this formula here. You just take this 1 plus s. It keeps getting multiplied that many times. So you just take 1 plus s to 1,273, and it tells you what the ratio of gene frequencies will be that far in the future.
And furthermore, you work out from that what the gene frequencies will be. We told, showed you, you can go back and forth between the ratio and the actual gene frequencies. So this is a case that's completely solvable in that you can see what the entire course of gene frequency changes. And in a little bit, maybe this time, I'll show you the resulting, what the resulting curves look like. So it's a solvable case, and it makes it a particularly important case. And in the homework I assigned, I ask you to use this case to try to get some idea what another case is doing. And you'll see that is straightforward. Okay, that's the case of where the fitnesses are. I'll say multiplicative, or some people might call it geometric. It's a geometric series. Okay. And it has a very simple property that every time you change a little a into a big A, you multiply the fitness by a number that's a little bit bigger than 1, or in the, if S is negative, a bit less than 1. Okay. Now we'll take another case. Let's suppose that big A is dominant. Let's see. And there I'm going to get the formula, but it turns out that it doesn't allow you to go forward any number of generations you want. But if we want to do the formula, it's pretty easy. Although first I have to set up the fitness scheme. So we'll say, let me try to make sure it is. Oh, I can do, there's another case I do in the notes I'm going to leave out, which is additive fitnesses, where these go 1, 1 plus S, and 1 plus 2S, which is almost the same, but not the same, it's a little S squared difference. If I do the additive case, I get a formula, which I won't show you here, it's in the notes. It turns out that case is not simple, in the sense you cannot go forward into the future any number of generations and predict exactly what the gene frequency will be, except in one very trivial case, which I won't go into right now. If big A is dominant, we'd have a case like this. Okay, so having a big A is enough to get you an increase in fitness by S over being little a, no matter how many big A's you have. Okay, or it could be a decrease in fitness by S if S is negative. So then you go do the same algebra, and you'll find P times 1 plus S plus 1 minus P times 1 plus S. That's this W bar big A. And in the denominator, it's P squared 1 plus S plus 2P 1 minus P times 1 plus S. Plus 1 minus p squared. Now, if I look at those, again, I see a 1 plus s sitting in every term. So in the numerator, it's p times 1 plus s. And what's left behind is p plus 1 minus p. So the numerator is just p times 1 plus s. The denominator, well, what it is, you can leave it like this. Or I claim it to be 1 plus s minus s times 1 minus p squared. But anyway, it needn't. It's a way of writing it a little more simply. Now, the thing about this is it looks okay, but it turns out there's no, like the additive case, there's no way of computing what the fitness will be, what the gene frequency will be an arbitrary number of generations in the future. That is reserved for the multiplicative case. But I want to concentrate a little more on the case where big A is recessive. Now, if you look at examples in genetics books, you'll find that little a is always the recessive allele. The big A is never the recessive allele. Well, that's just a convention. So I'm going to violate the convention, say, we're following this big A allele. Suppose it is recessive, even though it's a capital letter. Then we'll have fitness scheme 1
for that, oh dear, that's terrible. Heterozygote, little a, homozygote, one. For the heterozygote, still one, and for the big A, one plus S. Okay. So there's a case where you have a recessive allele. If you think about it hard, you'll actually see that in some sense it's the same case as dominant, but with the allele switched around. But I won't go into that. You get P prime is P times 1 plus S plus 1 minus P times the heterozygote fitness, which is 1. And in the denominator, I claim it to be 1 plus SP squared. Why? Because everybody's got a 1, and then a fraction P squared of the time they have an S as well. So it simplifies down that way. When you look at this here, you find that this is P times 1 plus SP over 1 plus SP squared. So you look at that and say, okay, well, that doesn't look too cooperative either. Except there is one case that's particularly biologically important in which you can predict gene frequencies in the future in this case. In general, you can't. In general, you can get a very good idea of what they're doing, or you can just crank them out numerically one generation after another. But there is one case where you can solve it analytically, and it was the very first case ever done in 20th century population genetics. I mentioned to you there's a paper by William Ernest Castle in 1903 in which he took the case of a recessive lethal allele. And in the recessive lethal allele, that is the case, well, suppose you have an allele floating around the population, homozygote is dead or sterile. Heterozygote and the other homozygote are perfectly normal. Okay. What case would that be up here in this fitness scheme? Anybody want to?
Zero, 1, 1, 0?
You mean 1, 1, 0? No, this...
One other way.
Big A is the recessive one here.
Yeah.
And it's
0,
dead.
1, 1, then?
Yeah, 0, 1, 1, which would require that S be...
-1.
Okay. So you can take this formula, and it becomes P. Now this will become 1 minus P. And the denominator would become 1 minus p squared. And then you look at that and say, oh, wait, call upon one's high school algebra and say, I remember some things about that. That denominator is, of course, 1 minus p times 1 plus p. And then you look at them and you say, well, there's 1 minus p, both top and bottom. So it's p over 1 plus p. And you may look at that and say, well, that's fine, but why does that be particularly tractable? And there's a particular case that shows that that it really is tractable. Suppose that p happened to be the reciprocal of something. So suppose it was like 1 half. 1 over 2, or 1 third, 1 over 3. And suppose we call that number n. So if p is 1 over something, this formula is just saying that. 1 over n over 1 plus 1 over n. Now you look at that, I claim that you'll find that that comes out to 1 over n plus 1. So if the lethal allele, the lethal recessive allele, is at a frequency of 1/5, let's say, in the next generation it will be what? If it was 1/5, then it becomes after one generation of selection.
1/6.
Sorry?
1/6.
1/6. So in fact, if we try to follow the p's through time and start out at a half,
We'll get a third, let's see, I guess we'll have to do time, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc., a quarter, a fifth, a sixth, and so on. And then you can immediately see if you go 100 generation to generation 100, that will be 1 over 102. I think if you do your little bookkeeping there, it's always that in this particular case, it's the denominator is 2 greater than the t. If you go to generation 1,000, 1 over 1,000 is 2. Generation 10,000, 1 over 10,000 is 2. And so on. So you can actually figure out the frequencies. And the thing to notice here is that the gene frequency is changing very quickly up at the top. It goes from a half down to a third. It's 50% down to 33% in one jump. But later on, it's going like from 1 over 102 to 1 over 103 in one generation. So that would be like a dropping 1% or so of its value. Down here, it's dropping 0.1% of its value each time. Down here, it's factoring 0.01% of its generation. Now, there's an intuitive reason why it's so. It starts down quickly and then stalls out. It keeps dropping, but it's slower and slower and slower. And the elimination of a rare lethal recessive is a very weak and slow proposition. And the reason is very simple and intuitive. It's that you only die if you run into another copy of yourself, if you're the recessive allele. So initially, you have a high chance of running into somebody who is the same copy, and then you're dead. But when you get down low in frequency, if you're that allele, the chances are you won't run into another one of yourself, and mostly you won't be selected out. So as a rare recessive gets, as a recessive gets rare, it will be if it's deleterious, it will be decreased by selection very slowly. And similarly, if it's rare and advantageous, it'll also be increased by selection only very slowly. So this case basically was the case that William Ernest Cassel was working on in 1903. He had to do the whole thing. He didn't know about gene frequencies. He had to do the whole thing in genotype frequencies. It took masses of algebra. But he got the right answer, that the homozygous frequency would go down as that thing squared. So half squared, a quarter squared, fifth squared, sixth squared, and so on. He got the correct answer. Okay. So here you get a feel, you're getting a little feel for how quickly gene frequencies are changing in the multiplicative, in the recessive case, in the dominant case. And now what I want to do is give you a feel for what the whole course of gene frequency change looks like. Okay, so first of all, I'll do a little bit of algebra, but while I'm doing them, I'll try to get the projector going so we can see. Could you push the... Yeah, oh, it is already... Well, I guess the thing to do is push it again so it goes off. That one, yeah. And then push it again so it comes on. With a little bit of luck, well, I don't know what will happen. I'm going to show you that this is a figure in the notes. If you have the notes, you will... let me see if I can find the thing I'm looking for. There we go. Okay. But the question will be whether, okay, it's still trying to make up its mind. Yeah, it's calming down after having been turned off.
I'm sorry, does this remind you of the power series or something? The
Well, it's a harmonic series. Yeah, here we go. Now I just have to get this to project on the screen. Let me do a small amount of algebra first. For the multiplicative case, if we take this and we do, if I were to do a formula for the gene frequency of the other allele, I'll get something like this. And when I take the ratio of them, I'll get that the new gene frequency of big A over that of little a is the old one times 1 plus s. I just showed you that elsewhere on the board. And then you can say going t generations into the future, so we'll put a little t in parentheses up in superscript here, is the initial value, which I'll now call p with a super zero. I think it's calmed down and not making lights anymore.
Okay, yeah.
Now push the upper button. Yeah. With a little luck, it'll start coming on. And what will happen is it'll get multiplied by that t times. So now we just use one thing that we saw before, which is that if we know this ratio, which is this thing, the gene frequency in generation t will equal to the ratio times the ratio there. I'll get the screen set up in a moment. Over that same thing, 1 plus s to the t plus 1. And you may look at that and say, that looks pretty horrible, but what you can do is you can multiply through by 1 minus p, and the formula you will get will look like this. P0 to the 1 plus t, s to the t, and then the denominator you add on the 1 minus e. Okay, so there is the formula for what the gene frequency will be t generations in the future. We now have a projection. And it looks like this. So this is the case where we start at, I think it's 1%. It's the one used in the notes. And it, we start at 1%, and we're going up with a fitness of, just found an error in my notes. It's 1.2. S is 0.2. So in this case, initial gene frequency 1%, 1 plus S is 1.2, so of course S is 0.2. So we have a 20% advantage of big A allele, and we start at 1%, and then you will crank out the formulas, and there the box is going. Now, the curve may look kind of familiar. If you've done, if you've taken courses in ecology, you'll remember the logistic curve, which is a common model of the growth of populations. What have I not done?
Oh, the equation kind of reminded me of logistic equations a little too, but I don't know.
The who, what?
Never mind. The equation reminded me of the logistic.
Yeah, the equation should remind you of logistic, because what it turns out here is, it looks to be the shape of a logistic. It has the same property that the logistic has, which is it starts out looking like an exponential growth, hits the 50%, gets up to 50%, and then the rest of the curve, which goes up to an asymptote, is just a reflected version of this one. So you go up by exactly the amount this way that you would come down that way. So if you take this and flip it up and down and flip it left to right, you get the other part of the curve. And so in fact, the logistic curve, if you draw it out, if you get the right, pick the right values for the rate of change, interpolates these points. It goes right through them. So it's a discrete version of the logistic curve. But it's not the same thing. It's not population size, it's gene frequency. The population size could be doing we know not what. The gene frequencies are going to change in this way from near zero up to an asymptote. And you can rather quickly work out how long does it take to go from 1%, let's say up to 99%. And how do you work that out? Well, you could just try it. But the other thing you can do is use these formulas here. Because you could say, well, 1% is 0.01 over 0.99. 99% will be 0.99 over 0.01. So we can work out these two numerical values, and from those you can figure out what t is. And the formula is, I'll give you the formula, the general formula. It is the time to go from gene frequency, let's see if I get this right. No. Not getting it right.
So cool.
Yeah, there it is. Well, it's actually this here is the logarithm of 1 plus s. And then this is the logarithm. Let's use log sub e, although in the notes I tend to use ln. Doesn't much matter. The final p over 1 minus that minus the log of the initial p over 1 minus that. Failing to. Okay. Anyway, there's a formula involving logs of ratios of gene frequency. You work out how many generations in the future you go in order to get from one gene frequency to another gene frequency. It's very easy. And I have a table of some values in the notes. And they go, I think, yeah, I did not give you the tables in this. I think I better do it over on the side here. If you take a case with gene frequency with different values of of S. I don't know if the people up on this side can see what I'm doing here. So let me try to tilt it a little more. If you take values of S of 1.1, 0.01, and 0.001, so we're taking weaker and weaker selection. S of 1 means that every time you add a big A instead of a little a, you double the fitness. So the fitness is this. We're back in the multiplicative case. The fitnesses are 1 to 2 to 4. But here, if 0.1, it'll be 1 to 1.1 to 1.1 squared, which is 1.21. This will be 1 to 1.01 to 1.0201, and this will be similar. And then if we take some ranges of gene frequencies, and I'm just copying this from table 2.2 in the notes, if we go from 1% up to 10%, the number of generations it will take is 3.46 for this case, 25.16 for that case, 240.99, and 23.99.09 here. Now you may look at those and say, okay, so these are showing you how long it takes to get from 1% up to 10%. with weaker and weaker cases of selection. Okay. Now you may look at it and say, what do you mean 3.46? This is a discrete generation. It goes in whole numbers. And the answer is, in generation 3, it's not quite there, and in generation 4, it's jumped past there. And that was a baby that I was waving to. And so in generation 25, it's not quite there, and in generation 26, it's gone past there. And when you could imagine yourself interpolating in the proper way, and you would get those numbers. Now, suppose we take a range going from there, from 10% on up to 0.5. So it's from here to here, basically. How long does that take? And the answer is 3.17, 23.05, 220.82, and finally 2198.32. Now, if I go out and I do the range from 0.5 to 0.9, what will I get? The answer is, because of the symmetries here, going from 0.5 to 0.9 will be the same as going from 0.1 to 0.5. The whole thing is symmetrical. So it's this same stack of numbers again. And likewise, the last column, 98.32, from going from 90% to 99%, again, it's the same numbers because of in this logistic case, which you get from the multiplicative fitnesses, everything, the curve can just be flipped. Okay, so, all right, so seeing those numbers, what do we get out of it? I think the first thing we get out of it is this. You can see this sort of symmetry of how long it takes. It takes just as much to go up from 1% to 5% to 50% as to go to 50% up to 99%. Same number of generations. But these are kind of comparable numbers. The ranges that I've chosen happen to have them. But the other thing to look at is, what is the effect of weakening selection? If I have not selection coefficient of 1, but 10% as much selection. Well, the answer is that it doesn't mean that you're going 10 times more slowly, but almost. It's going from 3.4 to 25. Well, that's less than a 10 times as long. But from here to here, if I weaken selection going from 10% to 1%, that's much closer to a factor of 10. There's 1/10 as much selection, and it's taking approximately 10 times as long. Down here, you can see it's even closer. 240.99, 2399, that's nearly 2400. So as you get down to weak selection, the time it takes to make any change is inversely proportional to the selection coefficient, but not precisely. When the selection coefficients are strong, then you're a little off from that. But for weakish selection, it's weak. It gets you there in a proportionately longer time. So 10% as much selection means you take 10 times as long to get there. So in this deterministic theory where there's no genetic drift, and we're effectively in a huge population, natural selection that's weak will still get you there. It'll just take correspondingly longer. And that's one of the big lessons of that. Let me show you a little bit from the other curves. These are the figures from that chapter. For cases where there's dominance or recessiveness, I did not give you, they are in the book, but I did not give you the formulas for the change of gene frequencies. I just showed you the formula for the gene frequency in the next generation as a function of this generation. You can work out from those what the delta P formulas are, the formulas for the change of gene frequency. I just wanted to show you what they look like for a case where, let's see, in this case we're considering fitnesses where going from a little a to a heterozygote increases your fitness by 1.3. So it's a big, strong selection. It says you're going up by 130% in fitness. In the multiplicative case, you then multiply by another 130%. So you go 1 to 2.3 to 5.29. That's the multiplicative case. That's this M here. Here is the gene frequency change vertically that you get from selection. It's strong selection, so it's moving along quickly. So it goes up and comes down in a kind of parabola-like thing. It's a little, it's not quite a parabola because of the things happening in the denominator there. But the interesting thing is to look at the dominant and recessive case. The corresponding dominant case would be 1 to 2.3 and then 2.3 for the other genotype also. So if it were, if big A was advantageous, 130%, but in the big A homozygote, still the same, it's reasonable to see that that case won't quite change as fast. So this D curve is underneath the M curve. But the interesting thing to see is it goes up, and then it comes down, and look what's happening. This one dives into one. This one, however, approaches asymptotically. What you're seeing there is when the dominant allele gets very frequent, that's your out on the right side of the curve, the rare allele that's being selected against is recessive. So again, rare recessives change slowly. And you can see that here, that when you get up to like 99%, the gene frequency is just creeping along. Why? Because those recessive little a's are only encountering each other rarely. They're rare now. Big A is frequent, little a is rare.
You could think of it like they're shielded.
Sort of. I mean, there are not too many of the little a's. They're in danger of running into other little a's, and they don't do that too often. Likewise, in the, here's the recessive case, which was 1 to 1 to 2.3, and it changes very slowly when that allele, the recessive one, when big A is the recessive one, and it is rare, but more quickly when the recessive allele is very common. So I'm just trying to give you a feel for how recessiveness affects the rate of change, how different selection coefficients reflect the rate of change. The formulas, I haven't given you every formula here, but they're all in the book. And where we're headed,
is the reason that the recessive curve goes higher than the D curve because you start out with more...
That's a good question. Why does this one cross the other one? Yeah, there is an excellent explanation, but my brain is on adrenaline right now, so
okay.
I cannot give it to you.
All
right. It certainly is true when you're out here. This thing has rare recessives, but
yes,
this thing has got rare dominant ones, and rare dominant ones are okay because one copy is enough to make you change. So I guess that, you know, you can sort of see why it would be in that order out here. Okay, where we're headed next time is I want to talk about the particular cases of overdominance and underdominance, which are cases where the heterozygote either has the highest fitness of the three or the lowest fitness of the three. What they actually tell you is a little bit about one way to maintain both alleles in a population actively by natural selection. That's in the overdominant case. But they tell you something about optimization of mean fitness of the population, because both of them show you properties of natural selection and of its, and in the underdominant case, they show you why natural selection does not always optimize mean fitness of the population. So we'll pick that up, and I actually ended almost exactly on time. I will be confirming the homeworks you turned in a bit later this afternoon, and